Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 2.
Right. See, the signposts, as far as we were concerned, were all twisted round in all different ways. Now, whether that was done by the Germans or whether it was done by somebody else, we don't know. But this is where you had to be very careful, because big parts of Normandy were mined. And that little tiny, if anybody goes down to the museums, they can see them. They're like little tiny wooden mouse traps, and they're called Schumann mines, which are just under the surface, and they're enough to blow your feet off. So therefore, everything we done was in the middle of the road until we got to a place where there was cows. So we used to open the gate of the, and let the cows come out. And then if we wanted to put 8 guns into another field, we would put the cows into the field first and chase them round. If there was any mines in there, the cows would blow themselves up, which is an unfortunate, terrible thing to do. But the thing was, it was to save our own lives.
Did many of the cows get blown up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They used to do it with sheep as well. And then once we got that clear, then, of course, we got the business of the tanks with what they called the flails, with the long chains on the front. Well, if them flails hit 5 mines, the chains would be blown to pieces. They'd be too high up on the reel for them to come down and do their proper job again. So you had to wait for a tank or another flail to come to carry on doing the field, because the chains got blew to pieces. And they were big, thick chains. Then we moved on to as I said, the fillets.
You were saying that you weren't doing much firing.
No, we didn't do it, no, yeah. Because 25-pounders were all in front of us at the time. Because we were like waited to lay onto the heavy stuff. See, there was no great, as far as I could see from our rhythm, there was no great tank divisions down there. For some unknown reason, I don't know why, but we went through. Whoever picked the place was a marvellous person, because we went straight through what level land. It wasn't until we came out of Falaise, where we came out of the forest, after laying down the barrage the night before, then they were still difficult in the forest to get out. So we called up the RAF, and the RAF come over and dropped heavy bombs all around there. But the unfortunate part about that was they were such big craters that we couldn't get down the road, because we had to wait for the holes to be filled in outside Falaise. And the last I remember of Falaise was coming out of there was there was a civilian ambulance blown up from the ground and was resting in the top of a tree. The ambulance was right up at the top of the tree. I suppose any old people in Falaise my age now would probably remember the ambulance in the tree.
Did you see much of German prisoners at this time?
No, not a great deal, because there weren't all that many down there, I don't think. See, you're occupied really by your own regiment, your own safety, because remember, when you're going into the forward line, whoever it was, there's a regiment that puts up posters. Keep your head down, otherwise you'll lose it. Whatever regiment that is. And then the other thing that makes you very careful of is wherever you go along that road, field, or wherever you've cleared so you can get the guns through, so you become across white tents. And outside the white tents is white crosses, all being made by carpenters inside the tents, which is a bit of a frightening scene. So therefore your own protection and your people who we work with, their protection is just the same. So therefore you don't mingle with the outside people.
How did you feel at this time that things were going? Did you feel...
We used to get it over the wireless, but then we used to get North African news and everything. But with us, I don't think there was any problem with not knowing that we're going to win it. Because remember that you talk about the British Army, the Scottish and the Welsh and all them regiments, you're talking about people that are trained up to a high standard. And you had to be a high standard, otherwise you got your knuckles wrapped. You had to be clean, tidy, and, you know, discipline was the top mark. But that discipline saved your life. Because that's where we never had so many casualties, only on the big roads. But the discipline was the part of our life.
But the Germans were also a highly disciplined force.
Only the SS people. Not the, see, you remember that the armies were two armies. The SS people were the soldiers with the flashes on their tunics. But the actual German soldier wasn't. He was a very hard man to shift in the field. See, they had machines where it was like a boring hole. And they used to go along the side of the field with this boring machine. You could see it. And it would dig the earth out in a hollow. And you'd have one jump in it. And then you'd get wood and cover it over him. But they had a clever sense of remaining very still. So that you could walk by them, you could see the wood on the ground, but you didn't know there was a German underneath it. They were very instilled with like a that kind of thing.
Do you remember when you first saw the enemy, personally?
In Normandy.
Do you remember where and
I can't remember. No, I can't remember. No, it's 40-odd years ago, isn't it? See what I mean? I mean, I'm only recalling this all from memory. As I said, it's very difficult. See, the one of the things are that you can recall your mind more if you had a map that followed you all the way through. See, I'm jumping from places. See, I was at one place putting down the barrage for Falaise, and then we put down the barrage for Ghent, which was another big town there. See? But we didn't go into Ghent, we just fired onto it, because we moved on from there to somewhere else, where we were called for, where we were wanted. And with us, you see, 5 5-hour, our biggest problem was we couldn't travel too far, too fast, because the wheels of the guns used to get very heavy and very hot. So we always had buckets and buckets of water in the wagons so that we could tip it over the axle or the wheel brace to cool it down so we could go on. Otherwise, if we hadn't done that, we would have been beaten. See, the brain carrier and all that went on first, observation post and all that kind of thing, but the guns we had to keep our eyes on all the time. See, because of the heating up of the wheels.
Did you get any breakdowns of the guns?
Only when you get the barrel split, when you get a breech block, when you get the shell fixed in the breech and it blows the barrel out like a banana.
Did that happen?
Yeah, it happens fair times. I mean, nobody can tell what's inside a bullet. Nobody can tell what's inside a shell. Nobody can tell it's going to work perfect. But we had the Royal Engineers with us who could whip the barrel off and put a new barrel on within, an hour. So you had no problem with moving on again.
In Normandy, did your unit take any casualties?
What, from the other side or from our own side?
From either.
Well, we had casualties from our own side because there were people who drove wagons and then carriers. Sometimes there would be one step on a little wooden mine. So therefore, we had to either shift our blokes around to move it. And so you had one come off the gun and do drive. Because we were all drivers. We were all gunners. We were all signallers. We were everything and everything else. And I remember going to one place. We'd been travelling, a couple of days, I suppose. And the unfortunate part about that was the fella drove up with a wagon, with a food all in the wagon. And everybody was standing there waiting for the tea and everything else to be made. When all of a sudden, nothing happened. When we looked into the driver's cab, it dried of a died of a heart attack. So we had to get him out, and unfortunately he was buried by the side of the motor. And we just left him there, like in a grey blanket, and then just had all our food round him, and then just moved over and left him there. See, you left them there because another big organisation we had was the church. See, you'd lay down a barrage or a spring gun carrier, see, and shoot during the night, which would kill Germans or things like that, or accidentally civilians or something like that. You'd have the padre go out with his pig wagon. We used to call them pig wagons. That was a small, what they take pigs to farm, to the market in. Well, the old farmer, the padre would go out the next morning before we went out and go all through the fields, all through the different lanes, and just pick them up and put them one on top of the other in the pig wagon. Drive them all back then, and he would do the sorting out and give them the white crosses.
See, what denomination did he belong to?
It was either Roman Catholic, Church of England, Presbyterian, or whatever it was. It was ever in your locality. It depended on how big the battles were. They would go in because they'd all get together, them people. See, because their job was just to get the people out of the way first. The only other thing was that they had to do that because there was a period of time out there. We had a very hot spell and a very rainy season. But I can't remember actually when it was or when it wasn't. And we were covered in blue bottles. And the thing was that if they laid on the floor too long before you found them, then the blue bottle got inside of them. And so as you went up like to see them, so you'd have the blue bottles coming out their nose and out their mouth. So what we had to do was we had to get mould, get water and get the ground, the earth, and then you just put it on their nostrils and over their mouth to stop the flies from getting into them.
You know, this is in Normandy?
In Normandy, yeah. Going up towards France. Yeah. There was all different things. See, that was one of the reasons why you didn't know where you were. Because there was all things going on.
Was the work of the padres appreciated by the soldiers?
It was a soldier padre.
But yeah. Did the soldiers appreciate the work that they did?
Oh, of course you did, didn't you? Appreciated everybody. I mean, the padre was a good information. Because the padre, when he used to go out and pick out the bodies, his life was in his own hands. Because he didn't know whether it was mines in the field. He didn't know who killed the first man on the floor. But once the padre went out with his wagon, then you knew that that field was clear, you could put your guns in there. They did a marvellous job, the padres.
When you protected those corpses from blue bottles, did you do the same with the German corpses?
Whoever it was, to stop it. To stop them from breeding. So whoever it was on the floor, until the padres come and took them.
So that was with the enemy as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you treat both lots the same when they're dead, don't you? You try and get them off the roadway or off the field and put them into a pile so the padre can easily find them to bury them. There's no point in leaving them for tanks and guns and all that business to run over them. It only makes it worse. That's what I say, we were instilled with this discipline. I mean, all this was practiced, you know.
Were you taught to do that in training?
You were taught in training to take your own casualties back to the, your own, what's name, lorries?
But to put this mud in their
nostrils? No, that was something that we just done because it was a one-off at the time. It was something we never expected. But that was the only thing we could think of.
Did you put it in their ears as well?
Yeah, put it everywhere, all over their ears. Ears, if their eyes was all right, it would have left them. It was just their nose and their mouth, when their mouths were open, stopped the blue bottles getting in. It's rather nasty to say that. Yeah.
Were you injured at all yourself at this time?
Yeah,
era?
I got shrapnel through the middle of the legs, but that was up by Arnhem.
We'll come on to that later. Mm. So you pushed up from Normandy through France
right
into Belgium
France.
To
yeah.
Ghent.
Yeah. Mm.
Were you fighting all the time?
Far and all the time. Yeah, crash bang bollock all night long. Well, not night times, because for the simple reason that the Fokkers up there, they used to see us. And you can always tell that when you were out there at the time, you could understand the difference between the engines. Our engines ran on our Spitfires and things, ran very, and the American Dakotas, twin-engine Dakotas, our engines run very smoothly. But with the Germans, they didn't add pop, 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 so you could hear them where they were. And when it was dark and cloudy, you couldn't see them. So therefore, you had to be very quiet and very still. I mean, there was no smoking for anybody between dawn and dusk.
Did you ever have a sight of the targets which you were firing on?
No, no, because we were firing at long range. I think that we had 80-pound shells, and we had charges up to charge 7, I think it was. And the charges were like a candle, a white candle. The cordite was like a white candle. It was a thing like that. And all the charges were tied round it. So if you got the order charge 5, you took 2 bags of cordite off and threw them away. If it was charge 3, you took off 4. If it was charged a full charge, you just left it as it was. Put it in the gun that way. And that was all your charge, and that was your range and everything else from them. I mean, them sticks of cordite were like spaghetti sticks. But we used to use them for cooking our tea and making our tea on it. The cookhouse used to do that. Yeah. They used to use the cordite to light the fire. Only the daytime. When we went into Belgium, we no sooner got into Belgium the first day that we didn't fire anything in Belgium because when we got there, the infantry had been there and all the chinchilla rabbits had escaped, running about all over the place. Well, as I say, that these things that the army teach you is good. Make no mistake. Now, the cooks that we had with us were brilliant. So the first thing we knew was we had rabbit stew. The poor old chinchillas went. And it was the same as in Normandy, in them places, when their cows went down. That old butcher could get that steak off that cow and leave the rest of the villagers.
What happened to the chinchilla fur?
Cut it off.
Who got that?
The cooks, our cooks. We lived on the best food in the land.
But what did they do with the fur? Because it was quite valuable fur.
Yeah, well, they cut it off. What, the chinchillas? Well, we never had time to look for that. We just left that on the ground. But the butchers, they were really good. I mean, we had eggs and bacon. You know, when we were standing, not because there was all the farms there. Milk. You'd have the old cook go out and milk the cow.
Did you see much of the civilians in Belgium?
Belgium wasn't touched very much, only in big places, like. But in the parts I went up through, it was up through Brussels, and we bypassed Brussels a bit. But the only thing I can remember about Brussels is when I came back and got hurt, this is on my way home, which would come at the end really, was I was in the 108 British General in Brussels, 108 British General Hospital. That was a big hospital, 108 British General, where all troops went. But first of all, when I got hurt right up near Arnhem, then they flew us from there in an old Sparrowhawk aeroplane, twin-engine Sparrowhawk. Very, very old type of aircraft, all stretcher cases. We flew from there, and then we were put into Dakotas. We flew from American Dakotas, back to Brussels. When we got into Brussels, there was all Belgium nurses. And the thing was that the night I had several operations because I had all the skin taken off my testicle. The time I was going down the operation lane the next day at 9 o'clock in the morning, the doodlebugs were going over then to bomb Amsterdam. And what happened? All my old little my nurses ran away and left me right in the middle of the pathway. While I'm lying there on the stretcher, the old doodle bugs are going over the top. Into Amsterdam.
But that was after you being injured at Arnhem.
After I'd been there.
We'll come on to that in more detail later on.
Yeah.
But talking about the push up through Belgium.
What
can you
I made my way up there with no map, up to Carpico now. We're up as far as Carpico, where we took part of Carpico.
Yes, that's going back to Normandy. Can you tell me about Carpico, what you found there?
That's what I say, we pushed up to the aerodrome because we had small Oster aircraft with us for it to take off for our targets. So we had to have the aircraft to land on, and that was the nearest place we got. When we got there, it was deserted. But it was very eerie because for the simple reason that somebody found the doors open to which led down to the ground. And we made our way very wearily down the staircase right under Carpico Aerodrome to these long corridors, which had all rooms off, but all scattered with papers, I don't ever know as well. And I think that they've got had a railway down there. But when I went back a few years ago to try and find out and see if it was there and been turned into a museum, I couldn't find the entrance to it. All it is now is a civilian air force.
So that was stopping off at Carpico on your way back from Arnhem?
No, going up towards Arnhem. Going up towards Arnhem, going up to the battles up there with the... I think that then the next thing from that was Maceron. I think the order's further down lower. That was where we had the pontoon bridges for to get the guns over the river when they knocked the bridge down.
Where's this?
A place called Maceron on the River Orne.
This is in Normandy.
It's in Normandy, I'm sure it's the Orne, yeah. And then we went on from there to Fellows. We went up to Carpico. And then from Carpico we went and picked up a forest where we could hide the guns outside Eindhoven, which was with the Polish boys, the Polish parachutists. Now, the only thing I can remember about that was that in the village, we were trying to talk to the Polish parachutists, but unfortunately a lot of them were dead inside their gliders when we got there. We couldn't do nothing with them. The gliders were just gliders full of people. And a majority of them crash-landed, and a lot of our boys had crash-landed off the back of the things tying them over there. I think I was 82 miles when they gave us the order to prepare to move. I won't vouch for this. And we had to travel that distance to get up to try and get the boys out of Arnhem at all costs. Well, it was the hardest slog I think I've ever done in my life, where we had the gun wheels getting hot, we had breakdowns with lorries, it was all sorts of things. And then eventually we got to, as I say, this forest in this village where the Polish gliders were put down. They now have a church there. I've been to the Polish church since I've been home and seen it. And then, of course, the next day then it was on to across the bridge into the... But I can't find the bridge we went over. That's why I'd like to have had a map. So we went across a concrete bridge, not the Robertson Bridge. We went across a small concrete bridge where we could just about get through, and that was where we got caught on the other side. Because if... we were on the main road of Eindhoven. Now, there's a black forest down here, behind us. So they let us come up here.
On the right?
And we were going to turn right and go over the bridge, which some of us did do. But there was the forest and the Polish boys here. But the Polish people had left because they were over there because they'd been pushed over there. Now, this was vacant. And when we started to go across there, Germans come out of the forest.
From the left?
Cut us all off. And that was when they were starting fighting and everything else. But they managed, lucky enough, that was when they beat us and they cut the rest of our lot off back in Eindhoven. So all those that was over the bridge into the actual town of Arnhem were caught and trapped.
So you were cut off, were you?
On the other side of the bridge, yeah, for about 3 days.
Was this a battery or the whole of...
No, it's only just the advanced signallers. Because we were going over there to lay down wires and get ready for all the guns to come across the bridge to do the firing. But they were behind us because they couldn't get down there because of these come out of the forest.
How many of you were there who were cut off?
Three and three. About six. See, because we had reels on our backs to lay out the telephone wires. Because you couldn't do any signalling or anything like that. Or any noise with wireless, because we were told that there was frogmen in the river. German frogmen in the river waiting to blow the bridge up.
How far from Eindhoven were you, do you think?
Oh, I should say somewhere in about what? 5-10 miles down towards the forest. See, nobody knew they were in the forest.
So you said there were six of you. Who was the senior man amongst you?
Anybody.
Was there anybody of higher
no.
rank than you?
No.
So nobody was in charge?
No.
Was anybody giving orders?
No, we just had Aaron Wallace said to try and relay back to us from a cable. See, the telephones were one side and we were taking the telephones over the other side.
Was your cable cut? Or were you able to communicate?
I can't remember. There was so much skirmish in there.
Were you able to communicate back, though?
No. See, they were all in houses. Some of the houses were smashed, some of them were broken down. There were Germans in some houses, our boys in other houses.
Were there any infantry near you?
No, only Red Devils, the parachutists. They were the boys that come down there.
So you were with the parachutists?
Well, mixing with them. Not fighting with them, mixing with them. Because nobody knew what to do. Nobody knew what to do. We had nowhere to run. We couldn't get out because we had the river in front of us.
So
in a big river.
Was there a parachutist officer who was giving you orders?
Never saw anybody.
Or a parachutist officer?
We were hiding, weren't we? Because we were hiding by day. And only just looking out the windows by night. And we could see the Germans in the street below us.
What kind of a house were you in?
Oh, that's I can't remember.
A big house? Or
big
small?
Houses, big houses, yeah, big houses.
Mm. What was there in the houses?
Nothing, just the furniture and everything else. All we used them for was the toilet. We couldn't make any food, we couldn't light no fires, we couldn't do anything.
Did you have any food to eat?
Only what was left in the house.
What
was that? Bits of bread and cheese. Dutch cheese. That was all we had.
Didn't you have your own
no.
iron rations?
No.